You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Sidney Lumet was 80 when he was given a Lifetime Achievement Oscar, and I suspect most people in the movie business thought that he would take it and ride off into the sunset. Instead, he has returned 3 years later, guns blazing literally, with what critics are calling his strongest film in years. Before The Devil Knows You're Dead stars Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke as brothers involved in a criminal scheme that goes terribly wrong. And joining them in an impressive list of co-stars are Marissa Tomei, Albert Finney, Brian F. O'Byrne, Rosemary Harris, and others. The film opens tomorrow at Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and if that isn't enough of a reason to celebrate, Mr. Lumet is also being honored tonight with a special tribute by the Museum of the Moving Image. Philip Seymour Hoffman, Ethan Hawke, and Marissa Tomei will be on hand for that event, and I'm very pleased that all of those things have brought Sidney Lumet, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Ethan Hawke back to my show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Sidney, your films have earned nearly 50 Oscar nominations. You've been receiving personal honors ever since you were given the D.W. Griffith Award of the Directors Guild of America in 1993. Do you think that you were expected to ride off into the sunset at that point?
That or die. they don't really care which.
They just want you to go away.
Yeah.
Stop you know, taking their awards.
Enough already.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've done it. You've achieved all of this. You made the 40 or so movies.
Well, I can never quite tell whether the honorary Oscar, which, by the way, is a great joy. I'm not one of those people who say, oh, I can't stand this Oscar thing. I love Oscars. but they do treat the honorary Oscar. I hope it hasn't begun to replace the Gene Herschelt Award.
Yes. Well, and your career is particularly long because you started off in the business as a child actor in Yiddish theater.
We didn't have Oscars in the Yiddish
no,
theater.
No, I don't even know what award you would have gotten in the Yiddish theater.
The Hebrew Actors Union gave an award.
No,
I was too little. I was only 4 years old, Ethan. Yeah. And
well, but Ethan should understand. He started almost that old himself, didn't
really,
he?
Ethan? You were a kid?
14.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I was working at 14, but I was a 10-year veteran by then.
Now, had you just thought you'd be an actor the rest of your life, or what did you imagine you'd do? Did you ever think that you might want to become a director when you were a kid?
No, directing never occurred to me because, you see, in those days, in the 30s, in the theater, both Broadway and in the Yiddish theater, we were snobs. Movies were for earning money. They weren't for art. And you were allowed to go away once every 2 years and make $12,000, which would support you for the rest of the 2 years. But for the next 2 years. But no, you didn't do movies.
Should I assume that, like an actor, character development is your primary focus when you begin working on a film?
I think that's true, yeah.
Now, what is that like for the actors, Philip and Ethan? You hadn't worked with Sidney before, had you?
No.
Neither one of us had.
No.
But did you feel from the start that he has earned that reputation as an actor's director?
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I think that that's kind of one of the thrills. Sidney was doing a lot of movies when I was falling in love with movies and falling in love in a time period where that kind of snobbery that you speak about, when artistry was really infiltrating cinema. I mean, you know, to see Al Pacino in Dog Day Afternoon, I think of every time I begin to work on a role, that's kind of the bar, for cinema, for mainstream entertainment, to have a person that real. I could smell that guy. Mm. I could smell his breath. I knew what his mother had for breakfast. He was such a full and complete human being, and the movie was so unpredictable and so realistic, and that's just picking one. So that reputation, when you say film.
Oh yeah, and I think the way. It's because I think because we had, I had heard from other people who had worked with Sidney and just his reputation about the rehearsals and about, you know, the way he used energy, really, is how I put it. You know, the way he is very intelligent about the energy that's expended through the day and that it's used to its optimum effect, which I think only somebody who thinks like an actor would understand.
Well, he has a reputation for really long rehearsal periods before actual shooting begins.
But and then when you're shooting, it's so intense. You're in it, then you're out of it, and you don't even know what happened in a way because the energy is used in such a economical way to get the best out of it. And it's something that a lot of people aren't aware of.
And in contemporary movies, certainly, I mean, there's so much posturing and posing in contemporary movies that Sidney doesn't, with this use of energy, it doesn't allow for.
So why don't more people do this?
Because they don't know anything about acting.
Because they don't know anything about preparation.
Yeah. In your case, Sidney, you worked on the stage, mm-hmm. and then you worked in the early years of television on CBS, and I assume that this all comes out of that, especially all of those Playhouse 90s-type shows.
Yeah, but also, you know, the thing is that people never really understand about actors when you say, well, he or she is shy, and they say, oh, come on, he's an actor. How can they be shy? And they can be shy very simply like the rest of us can be shy because they feel self-conscious about putting their emotions out there. Well, an actor is doing that all along. That's his art, is putting his her emotions out there. So there's a real conflict there, and it's painful. And I understand that, and that is one of the things that we get done in rehearsal, which is right. We get over that inhibition.
And you, not just Ethan and Philip Seymour, who have done a fair amount of work and continue to work on the stage, but also Brian F. O'Byrne, Amy Ryan, Marissa Tomei, Rosemary Harris, Albert Finney, all theater actors as much as they are movie actors.
Michael Shannon, too. I mean, the whole cast down the line.
Is that something that you thought of?
No, I don't necessarily go for theater actors, but, one of the joyful things about shooting in New York is if you hire anybody, that's what you're going to come up with. Their non-movie work is in the theater, whereas the California actors, and it amazes me that they can do as well as they do under that circumstance, their main non-movie work is television series. Right. And that is, I don't know how they keep their performances in movies as good as they do, because that has to be the most brutalizing effect on your talent that could possibly be, working 14, 16 hours a day on badly written, traffic-managed, not directed shows. And I don't know how they keep it up.
My guests are Sidney Lumet and two of the stars of his latest film, which is called Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke. The film, which has already gotten incredible response. The reviews that have come out before the opening this Friday have just been fabulous. And I don't know whether that energizes you when you
well,
when you go
out
to talk
about it.
Well,
as Mel Brooks says, it's good to be king. and Lumet's first law: a hit is always better than a flop.
And unfortunately you've had both.
Yeah,
but all of you. Do you see some kind of a dialogue between theater and working in films of this sort, or I mean, is this more than most of the films you've worked on, Philip?
Meaning what? How we prepared for it?
Many people have talked about how different it is working on the stage and working in films, because you got to work big on the stage, you've worked very small
in
films.
I'm not somebody who's I think honest work is honest work.
I agree.
And I think it reads, you know, I mean, because sometimes a young actor, once in a while, not often, but once in a while a young actor will say, you know, as I was working on this thing and I knew there was a camera there and I felt like I needed to be small. I'm like, listen, you can be as big as you want if it's coming from some place where, you know, genuine, people see genuine.
That's absolutely
It doesn't matter. And they're always going to be the people that get uncomfortable by humanity. And that's how I put it. They get uncomfortable by the real ugly side of people's emotions, and they think that's overacting. And but I disagree with that. I think on a film, a camera can be this close, and if you're genuine, you can let it go, and that's the way it is. And in the theater, it's the same way. So I try not to differentiate them too much, and I try to bring what I strengthen in the theater into my film work, and what I strengthen in film into my theater work, because there are two different things. And the thing in the theater is that you have to repeat your work, and film, you have to let go of it. And those are the two things that are different, I think.
Phil is absolutely right, because you know where those rules came up, like so many of the movie acting rules. You know, in the 30s, when people literally would be picked up off the streets and put under contract, if you had, Lana Turner was supposed to have been discovered at a soda fountain. I'd like to see that soda fountain. But at any rate, when you put...
Why wasn't I there?
When you put Lana Turner into an acting part, you're darn right she better stay small, because she wasn't an actress. She hadn't the remotest idea of what to do with herself. It took her like 6 pictures before she was even sort of presentable. So she better stay close to a whisper, because if she got into any sort of human voice, it would be false. It would just be fake.
But one of the fake things that I see in a lot of film work is, I think what Phil's talking about, is people get into this idea of minimalism is naturalistic, mm-hmm. and expression is fake. And in my life, you walk down in the New York City street, people express, people are alive, blood is pumping in them. And that's what I kind of mean, where I think so many directors, unlike Sydney, are coming from advertising or music videos, and there is this drive towards posturing and minimalism, that minimalism is real. And what happens is the contemporary movies look like a beer ad, as opposed to...
Yeah, it's another way to protect yourself.
And to hide behind. Hide behind these kind of glossy images, and it's certainly not human.
Well, both of you have scenes in which you show very strong emotions. Mm. Philip, his character, Andy, has a breakdown. You, your character, Ethan, Hank, goes through any number of terrible crises where he's totally overwrought. So you can go back from being perfectly calm to not over the top, but really in serious trouble.
You know,
and you're allowed that range in this film.
Well, I think the scene where the two of them are taking down the drug dealer's apartment and... grabbing anything they can.
You're spoiling a surprise.
Oh, no, that's okay. Because something happens
after
that.
They don't know when that happens.
Right. Yeah. But I think it's one of the best acted scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And,
oh, they're so fabulous together, aren't they?
And the top of the ceiling comes off. And without any awareness that it's gotten that big, it just arrives full-blown from the head of Zeus.
My guests are Sidney Lumet, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Ethan Hawke, who are in a film. Well, Sidney Lumet directed, the others acted, along with Marissa Tomei, Albert Finney, Brian F. O'Byrne, Rosemary Harris, and others. The film is called Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. It opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Sidney Lumet, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Ethan Hawke. We're talking about a film called Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas. We just heard a little bit of the music from the film, and the music is very effective here. How involved do you get in all the other aspects of the film, Sidney?
Total involvement. There's one of the joys of movie making is the community of it, because there are so many jobs to be done, and just like any one of those jobs can ruin a movie, any one of those jobs can make a movie. Mm-hmm. So one has to stay with it very closely, no matter what's done.
And directors, we've heard all those stories about Hitchcock not wanting any music in Psycho. Big mistake. Luckily, he caved in.
Bernard Herrmann did support it, did he not?
We would not have had...
That's like saying he wouldn't have wanted any screaming.
Yeah. Well, what about when you started? Your first film, which unbelievably was 50 years ago, was 12 Angry Men. Well, you were just a child.
Right.
And you've done a lot of films that have been adaptations of plays.
Right.
Is that just because you like the plays, or is there some kind of a dialogue that you see between theater and cinema as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think when you do a play as a movie, you can define it like it cannot be defined that way ever again, regardless of the interpretation of the actors. Because for me... like in Long Day's Journey into Night, there are four characters. Well, when I made the movie, there were five characters. The camera was the fifth leading character.
You're not counting the maid.
No.
Counting the maid, six.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, forgive me for being...
No. Quite right. There are no small parts, just small salaries. But that camera is as important as any other leading player.
And that's different than us sitting in the same seat.
Absolutely.
In the theater.
Because the camera can say something that, and add something to the text. Because, Long Day's Journey, I didn't have a screenplay. I used the text of the play.
Now, for the person watching the movie, that camera is a very subtle thing. Because we know when it's not working. We don't know why. But we know when a scene is not working, and often it's because the director just didn't move the camera right, didn't place it right.
Quite right.
And didn't show off the actors to the best of their abilities.
Well, you can absolutely defeat an actor with the camera. The camera can be going absolutely opposite to the intent of the actor, and literally defeat it. And there have been instances, thank God not on this picture, where you can compensate for a lack from the actor with the camera.
Mm. I'm sure that you've, as actors, have seen that from your side. You really thought you did an amazing scene, and then you see the movie, and it just falls flat.
I find whenever I think I did an amazing scene, it's pretty terrible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
I wasn't that amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. I mean, that you guys are talking about that. That the director had something to do with me being awful. It's usually just me being awful. In my experience, I think that's either my just complete innocence about how to use the camera, but yeah, I tell you, it is true, though, as an actor.
No, I would,
if you think you do well...
I would always blame it on the director.
Well, what's often true is that if you're not in sync with the director, you better get in sync with him, because... Yeah. If you fight him, if you resist with the cameras, if you're not working together, then you're going to lose. The actor loses.
Well, let me ask you something, Ethan. What do you do when, because you're aside from being a magnificent actor, you're a very bright guy too. What happens when you see that the director's really way off?
And we should point out that Ethan has also directed films.
Right. So is Phil.
Phil, you've directed theater. Have you directed film as well?
No, never film, but a bunch of theater, yeah.
So what do you do when you let me ask both of you, what do you do when you know the director is off on the wrong track and he's... And you know enough to know that he's shooting it.
Put my fist through a hotel wall and cry.
That's a tough one.
You have to figure out how to be on the same page with them,
I think you at least have to strive to have a healthy dialogue that can afford to be uncomfortable. Do you mean
drop dead?
I can go through a whole play or a whole film and have somewhat of a tense, uncomfortable, anxious relationship with the director. But as long as we are still finding the common ground, even though it's difficult to get there, mm-hmm. at the end of that shoot, I'll be grateful and like that person. You know what I mean? Because that will be satisfying. The worst experience is when you're with somebody and you look toward them and you're like, I need to have that conversation. I need to have that dialogue. And they're like, I don't do that. You know what I mean? There's directors literally are like,
I don't do that.
I don't do the acting thing.
They don't have the vocabulary. They know that good movies have good acting, but they really see it. The process of having to discover it or talk about it is an obstacle. Their shot list is so important to them, and any questions that you may have, their defense mechanisms go up so quickly is that what you're really trying to do is ruin their shot list. Right. And you're going, I'm not trying to. I want to actually help your shot list. I can actually help you know that you don't need those four shots if you realize, you know.
Right. Are you trying to usurp the film somehow? Some very weird thing can go down.
Really? That's what I mean. Yeah. Get on the same.
Instead of a collaboration, it becomes a power struggle.
You can stop that from happening. It can,
and that doesn't happen often, though. I really need to say it. I think people, it's so hard to get a film done, especially on the level of this film. You know, when it really is a scrappy movie that's being pulled together over years. That once you get there, more often than not, everyone really wants to make a good movie because it's taken so much.
We're so grateful
to get there
for the job.
You're so grateful to actually get this opportunity. And I find that more often than not.
And when you get a script, do you know right away that this will turn into a good film?
You hope. God, you hope.
No, I don't think every script has, well, if it goes this way, it would be really brilliant. If it was, you know, I think if this script of Before the Devil Knows You're Dead is, I thought it was a really good script, but, you know, if it was by some guy who had just done the banginest music video of the year, it would be a really terrible film because it would have been cynical in a way that was cool. And if this movie was cool, it would have been completely dishonest. And instead, the movie's got a heart on fire, and it's a Greek tragedy, and it's a god. And that element of it is
this movie's about the end of a lineage. I mean, people get a little, you know, again a bit think that I talked to, but this movie really. That's what I was saying. It's like if this works, we're going to have to actually go to that place to make this film work.
I've never been
Which
so happy
pretty
for a film to be over.
Big, tragic, classic place.
Well, we're going to give people a little taste because we'll play a clip from the film. My guests are Ethan Hawke, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Sidney Lumet, director of the film we're discussing, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which opens tomorrow at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica on Houston Street. And this is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Let's listen to a little clip from the film. Then we can talk more about these characters as a result.
Now listen. We don't want Tiffany's. We want a mom-and-pop operation in a busy place on a Saturday with a week's take still in the safe. We both work there. We know the safe combinations. We know the burglar alarm signals. We know where everything is. I figure between the week's take, the jewelry and the cases, the vault, there's a $500,000 haul. I figure probably six. That old dumb old lady that works there, she's alone till noon. She's not going to be a problem.
Andy.
Yeah.
That's Mom and Dad's story.
That's what I said. The mom and pop operation.
You know, that sends chills up and down my spine. That is scary. But it's interesting. I've read that, Sidney, when you sent Phil the script, you said you could be either one of the brothers.
Yeah, Phil was the first person I thought of for the movie, and I really didn't know which part he might want to play. I knew I wanted him desperately. And I said, is there anything more flattering you can say to an actor?
It was very flattering.
Had you seen Because of True West, do you think, where he played both parts?
Because of everything I'd seen of his. He's a miraculous actor. You don't mind if I talk about you as if you weren't here. also, from what I knew of his work and Ethan's work, I knew that to make this picture work, a level of intensity would be needed that would be just, we'd burst the sides of the screen.
Yeah, the seething inside.
Yeah. And so I sent it to him. And he didn't know. First time we talked on the phone, you didn't know which one you wanted.
Well, it was that thing of, I'm talking to Sidney Lumet, and he just said this to me. And I thought, well, I think I trust him more than my, I think I trust his head more than my head. And because in the moment, I think I had an idea of who I wanted to play, but I think I was tentative about it because I actually didn't trust myself because I was talking to him. And then I eventually did say, this is the part I want to play.
Yeah.
And he trusted me with that, and that was a huge first moment.
But it also, part of the luck of it, and, you know, one of the things these things always require if the results are good is a good degree of luck. I had by then sent the script to Ethan. And when Ethan said yes to that part, you know, I owe him something forever. Because on the page, it is a weak character. And
Ethan usually plays strong characters.
And you cannot cast a weak actor in that. You need a giant talent. And the selections that Ethan constantly made during rehearsal to activate this weak person who does nothing were so brilliant and imaginative, and I was so enamored of them and constantly surprised by them, because he was taking, quote unquote, a weak character, and what you cannot cast is a weak persona or clearly a weak actor. He'll just be wiped off the screen. Mm. And here I had, one of our best young actors just being brilliant right down the
line. Yeah, I remember when Ethan, I think you told me, Sydney, about Ethan being on board. And I remember that was a thing, you know, I think I said, but I remember I was like, oh, that's good. You know, I remember like, well, I was like,
well, isn't it an adventure?
I mean, it was kind of a thing like, yeah, that's right, you know.
Isn't it an adventure when you're working with people you haven't worked before, but you've
known?
Kind of feel that you
know? Yeah.
Phil, and I, auditioned for Scent of a Woman together.
So Ellen Lewis.
Ellen Lewis, yeah. And cast this movie. You know, that's, I remember, the first time I really remember talking to you, I think we actually met once before, but it was at the, like, little craft service thing at the, thing, and
yeah.
I told you I was really nervous. And, you said something encouraging. Phil got the part. I did not.
Different part, though. We were auditioning for a different part.
Yeah.
He was auditioning for the lead. I was 24 years old.
Yeah. For those that don't know it, craft service means the table.
The little food, yeah, right.
It's where the Teamsters hang out, because that's where the bagels are.
Yeah.
Now, this is also adapted from a play, isn't it? But it's, no?
Not that I know of.
Oh, I thought,
no, I
thought it was
completely original screenplay.
The screenplay by Kelly Masterson.
Right.
Originally, they were not brothers.
No, they were not.
That's something that you brought to this?
Yes, I thought.
I can't imagine it as anything other than brothers.
I felt so important to ratchet it up in the stakes, and that was one of the.
But it's actually what makes the movie work.
Well, it's why people are comparing it to Greek tragedy, whether you thought of that or not. In the middle of it, I started feeling, "Oh my, this is turning into a Greek tragedy," and of course. It isn't hurt by the fact that you have Marissa Tomei and that you have Albert Finney. And Brian O'Byrne. I mean, these are
and
amazing.
The heavenly Amy Ryan. You know, I mean, I lucked out on this one. I had the best casting person in the business, I think, Ellen Lewis. And
she is.
She's very.
She's
good.
Pretty great, Ellen Lewis.
Yeah. Well, the event tonight at the Museum of the Moving Image is being billed as a conversation with Sydney about his career, and understand that Marissa Tomei will also be there to join it. So have you people been, Phil and Ethan, have you been going over all of Sydney's films?
Yeah, I hope you guys have been rehearsing.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if I ever
told
you.
You know what you're talking about.
I Googled you this morning, and you're really a terrific director. I had no idea.
You've done a lot of stuff.
The truth is that I remember when your book came out, I was wandering around some bookstore, and I found it. And I actually read about 90% of the book in the store. This is back when I had nothing else to do in my life. I owe you 40 cents. Okay. But I remember I was really, the way that you talked about acting in that book was very moving to me. And the respect that you showed for the profession, particularly as a young actor at that moment when you're constantly bumping up against both people wildly celebrating the profession in kind of a dopey way and also, you know, subtly ridiculing it. You know, I mean, the way we...
Yeah.
The way
it's
we,
so true.
It's so true. It's it feels so non-substantive. What's the right word? And the way you spoke about it, I was like, that's the profession I want. And so I didn't need to go
read Yeah, I read morning. That book too. I've told you that a few times.
It has one of those great lines that only Sidney Lumet and Howard Hawks could have made. Good style to me is unseen style. It is style that is felt. And I think that's always been true of your work. The great films, the less than great films, there's always been this fabulous way of telling a story. I just the other day, I just coincidentally, because somebody I know is teaching a course on newscasting, I saw Network again. Uh-huh. And just amazing performances that you get from actors. Mm. Do you people have favorites? Is it Dog Day Afternoon, Prince of the City, Serpico, Running on Empty, The Verdict, Network, 12 Angry Men?
Tonight I'm going to introduce the clip section of the evening. And so they sent me all the clips they're going to show.
Right.
And I'm telling you, you know, whenever you watch clips from anything, like an actor's reel or a director's reel, it's always a bit awkward or something, seeing things out of context and stuff.
It's always high points.
But this is like the exact opposite. I mean, literally, you're watching actors that you think you thought you knew, and you get reminded you don't. I mean, that's really literally Sean Connery. I mean, these actors doing these performances, and you're just like, oh my God, I'd never seen them like that. Right, they were like that in that movie that they did with Sidney. And you realize and every scene is so fantastic to watch, and I thought...
Listen, I could listen to this all day. It's just lovely. But I think it's important to point out, that because I know my reputation with actors, but I never got anything out of any actor that wasn't there. And
well, of course,
but it's true. The idea that you are in the what I was watching, I was reminded once again that it had to be there. But you set up some kind of atmosphere and some scenario, and prepared in such a way where you gave them the best opportunity, I believe, Sidney,
to let it fly.
To let that fly, and that's something that I think is unique.
And we have
and
to
you
leave
should
it
accept
there.
And hear this.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately, but because this has been a lot of fun. But congratulations for another award, Sidney Lumet, and a fabulous film. I think this is just an extraordinary film. And I understand you're working on another one?
Yeah, I hope I can start after the first of the year.
This one is Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. And it stars Philip Seymour Hoffman, Ethan Hawke, Marissa Tomei, Albert Finney, and a cast of thousands. It opens at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the Angelica tomorrow. And if you want to know more about the event tonight at the Museum of the Moving Image, you can find out all the details on our show page. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.